I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 30th of October. Our guest this hour is Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. He earlier worked at Politico. He's co-author of HRC, a look at Hillary Clinton's time at the State Department. He's the past winner of Everett McKinley Dirksen and Sandy Hume Awards for reporting. We're going to be all over the place during the course of this hour. I thought we would start with Ebola. The governor of Maine, as you heard during the news from NPR, is looking for ways to force a nurse who released from mandatory Ebola isolation in New Jersey to follow a 21-day quarantine in Maine. She has decided not to do so, went for a bike ride today. Casey Hickox returned to the U.S. from Sierra Leone, where she was working with Doctors Without Borders. She said there is no scientific basis for quarantine, but it's been so much in the news. And the question, of course, is politics getting in the way of science? Well, even though we haven't reached the midterms yet, and we will talk about the midterms, but there's a lot of press reporting about Jeb Bush maybe running for president in 2016. Our guest has written about that and also about Senators Rand Paul and Marco Rubio. We'll be looking at President Obama's top choice to replace Eric Holder as Attorney General. We'll look at the closest Senate races across the South and the interesting report from the New York Times today that Democrats are running racially charged, their words, messages on African-American radio stations in the South. We will talk about that. Governor Chris Christie will be coming to Wisconsin tomorrow to campaign for Governor Scott Walker. We'll talk about that race a little bit and welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Jonathan, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Hello, Wisconsin.
And hello to you. Let's start with Ebola. Is this whole what we're going to do with people who have returned from West Africa going to eventually be decided in the courts, do you think?
I think there are actually very clear powers for the states and for the federal government in terms of quarantines. It's possible that there will be some lawsuits, but I don't think it's really a question of whether the power exists. I think it's a question of whether the wisdom exists to be putting people in quarantine. So, the federal government clearly has those powers, the states of New Jersey and New York. I mean, I think if you had a state that did not have that power specifically set out in law, you could have some problems if it tried to implement a quarantine. Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised that it has been so much discussed during this whole campaign in so many states?
I'm not, and here's why. I think it's not necessarily that people believe they're going to get Ebola. If you look at polling, people don't believe that they're going to get Ebola overwhelmingly, that they're not worried about them personally getting Ebola. And I think, you know, if you talk to the scientists, the folks at the CDC and the NIH, they would also tell you that you're unlikely to get Ebola. That said, the consequence of getting Ebola or the potential for an outbreak beyond the few people who have already been suspected of or diagnosed with Ebola in the United States, that consequence of getting it is so great that it sort of plays into a generalized fear and anxiety that I think Americans have right now. Certainly something that in the run-up to the election is being played up by Republicans, and I think you see that also on foreign policy matters in general. You see Islamic State sweeping across Iraq and Syria. I think that plays into some of those fears as well of just sort of being in an unsettled place in the world right now.
Yeah. And do you think that there is legitimate concern about containing this outbreak in West Africa, that if we don't, that it will keep people from going to West Africa if they have to come back to a long mandatory quarantine? And so many scientists have said we really need to contain this in West Africa.
Well, I think there is a real concern that that will happen, that if people feel like when they come back they're going to be quarantined for 21 days, they'll be less likely to volunteer. I have to say, I'd be surprised to meet the person who said they were willing to go over and have close contact with people with Ebola but weren't willing to be, basically homebound for 21 days when they came back. I mean, the type of people who go over to West Africa, heroes, as the president is calling them, I think, if they've got that in their heart, I think the willingness to to make sure that they're not spreading the disease to other people is something that I would think most of them would have, you know, that sort of willingness to sacrifice a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And what about Governor Chris Christie's comments to her? He certainly has had a week where he's been very forceful with somebody holding up a sign asking for more money from Hurricane Sandy, and his comments to her. Looking at a broader down-the-road picture for him, is this politically a good thing for him to do, to be kind of, someone could say he's being bullish. Others would say he's just being strong and forceful and very direct. He obviously is putting himself front and center here. To what aim?
So I think, number one, obviously he sees himself as the person who's responsible for protecting the citizens from New Jersey from potential health threats. But I think in addition to that, he can look at the polling, just like Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, can, and say 80% of the American public believes that people coming into the country from West Africa ought to be quarantined. That's an easy no-brainer political question as to whether he sees a benefit in it. If that's his motivator, I don't know, but it's certainly beneficial on that level. Telling people to sit down and shut up at town hall meetings, as the governor is inclined to do sometimes, I think it works if everybody else in the crowd thinks that the person who's making a point is wrong, or not just wrong, but is being abrasive in some way. I think, you know, Governor Christie's tendency to do that might be harmful to him in places other than New Jersey, where sit down and shut up is not considered to be an insult or particularly harsh among the broad set of things that New Jerseyans hear on a daily basis.
He's coming to Wisconsin tomorrow. He's been here before to campaign for Governor Scott Walker. Is he a plus campaigner? Is he a good person to have at your side?
I think so. I think Governor Christie is somebody that people want to see. They've heard a lot about him. He's somebody who might be running for president. He is somebody who is seen as likely as anybody else to sort of capture the establishment heart of the Republican Party and perhaps compete in a general election. So I think there's just some basic interest in him. I also think he's pretty good at rallying, particularly in Wisconsin. You've got a sort of tradition of a moderate Republican Party and a moderate Republican base there that I think he may be able to communicate effectively with at a time when Scott Walker is trying to hold on to that set in the face of Mary Burke.
Mm-hmm. Jeb Bush, he is all over the place this week. He's just everywhere, and it would appear to me that he's decided that he's going to run for president.
You know, nobody has said that exactly.
No.
But one of his sons has said to the New York Times that he's more than likely going to run, and, who would know better than his son? They've also said that his wife has given her assent, for him to run. So, the obstacles are being removed on a daily basis. I think Jeb Bush wants to get back out into the limelight, give a little bit of a test to see how he can do. George W. Bush is coming out with a memoir about his father called 41 here in the next few days. I think that'll be a test as to whether George Bush, the younger, can rehabilitate his reputation a little bit, which I think is a question that is integral to the possible success of a Jeb Bush candidacy, because right now his name is weighing him down.
Yeah, but what about Mom? Doesn't she not want him to run?
She had said that at one point, that America must have another family that could run,
right,
not named Bush. But, in the last quarter century or so, the Bush name has been on the ballot somewhere every time Republicans have won. So it's clearly the family that's done the best within the party at sort of bridging the divides between conservatives and the more moderate Republicans. And she has also backed away from those comments a little bit, Barbara Bush.
Mm-hmm. You wrote a piece, comments from the vice chair of the Republican conference, saying that there are two types of candidates from which Republicans can choose their nominee: a seasoned, experienced candidate, or we can take a look at younger candidates with different experiences. And he specifically mentioned Rand Paul and Marco Rubio. What about getting younger people to run? Is that what Republicans need to do? Can they relate to the electorate in some different and better way?
Yeah, so I had asked Senator Blunt what he thought about Jeb Bush and whether he thought Jeb Bush should run. And I expected him to say yes, because Senator Blunt had, as a House member, been very supportive of George W. Bush's first campaign. And so I was surprised when the first thing he said was, I don't know which direction we should take. And then he sort of clarified that more to say that there were these two different directions, the seasoned executive and then one of the younger folks with not quite the same resume as, say, like a Dwight Eisenhower. I think what he's getting at is that the Republicans are going to be trying to make a contrast with the Democratic nominee, who I think he expects and almost everybody expects will be Hillary Clinton. And I think that they do want to try to appeal more to the millennial generation, and they may be able to do that by having a candidate who has a younger who's a little bit younger, and not just on an age level, but also on the sort of question of experience. Can they find somebody who feels fresh in comparison to Hillary Clinton, who's been on the national stage, you know, since 1992?
It is amazing that we do have these families who are in politics for a long period of time, both the Bushes and the Clintons, isn't it? Isn't that amazing?
It really is. It is something to watch, you know, and at the same time, it's certainly not unprecedented. I mean, just ask John Adams and John Quincy Adams. But it does say something about the difficulty of running for president and the sort of fundamentals that you have to have behind you in order to be successful at it. One of those is money. The sort of national recognition and the fundraising base and those kinds of things. Once Bill Clinton had won the presidency, then Hillary Clinton becomes somebody who can access all those things. Obviously, she lost to Barack Obama in a primary last time, so it's not definitive or prohibitive, but it sure helps to be able to start out with a national network of fundraisers and donors and supporters and door knockers.
Yeah, the money is just unbelievable in all of these races. The midterms, the money spent in the gubernatorial race on both sides in the state of Wisconsin is just astronomically high, Jonathan.
Well, you know, but it helps the economy, right?
It helps TV stations, I guess.
if you're soliciting money from New York and Los Angeles and Chicago, and then you're spending it in Wisconsin, I have to think that's good for Wisconsin jobs.
Perhaps.
It may not be good. It may not be good for Wisconsin policy or politics, but it's probably picking up the economy a little bit. And I look at the presidential. President Obama, Democrats in 2012 spent something along the lines of $1 billion on the campaign. Fast forward to 2016, if you have a Bush-Clinton race, I mean, you could have as much as $3 billion spent on a presidential race next
time
combined.
Wow. Not too many people have written about this, and I'm wondering, you wrote about this, Obama's top choice to replace Eric Holder as Attorney General, the Labor Secretary, and he could announce that before next Tuesday, yes?
He could announce before next Tuesday. The Labor Secretary is one of the people who is in the mix. Tom Perez, he's a former head of the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department and a former local politician in Montgomery County, Maryland. He's somebody that I think would, very much make the Hispanic community happy if he were to be named. But I also think that there are some other folks up for that job right now. Don Verrilli, the Solicitor General, who argued successfully in favor of Obamacare before the Supreme Court, is somebody who's being looked at. I think Loretta Lynch, who's a prosecutor in New York, is being looked at right now. So it isn't settled yet, but I think it, particularly if Republicans are going to take control of in 2015, that you're likely to see the president make a very quick choice and see if he can get that choice through the Senate before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And finally, before we go to phone calls, New York Times had an interesting piece this morning. Democrats in close Senate races across the South turning to racially charged messages on black radio stations, invoking Trayvon Martin's death, unrest in Ferguson, Jim Crow era segregation to get the African-American vote out and to stop a Republican takeover in Washington. What do you think of that strategy?
It smells like desperation.
Does it?
It really does. I think, Democrats are very worried about the turnout they're going to get, not just among the African-American base, but also among other groups that make up the Democratic coalition, liberal whites, who will see those types of arguments and say, this is something that is troublesome to me too, the idea of voter suppression. So I think it's a base Democratic strategy, and I think they're going pretty hard at it. And I think, as the New York Times suggested, just in writing that story, I think that there was a risk of backlash. I think some folks will see it as unseemly to go there. If you're accusing the Republicans of attempting to return to Jim Crow laws, that's a pretty harsh accusation. So, it feels desperate to me.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. Jonathan Allen is our guest this hour, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. He worked at Politico earlier, and he is with us to talk about a variety of political subjects. Obviously, the midterms are front and center. We're talking about Ebola because that is also political and is front and center with the governor of Maine looking for ways, and we wonder if it'll have to be settled in the courts for this nurse to be quarantined in her home in Maine for 21 days. She is defying that and went for a bike ride today. Governor Christie has had things to say about this. The president has had other things to say about this. Are we looking at science or are we looking at decisions based on politics? We're welcoming your phone calls, and feel free to join in with comments about the midterms. Do you see that story that we just talked about last, what's happening on black radio stations in the South, as a move of desperation on the part of the Democrats? Do you think that this will be a very big year for Republicans? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jonathan Allen is our guest now, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, and we go to phone calls for him. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And let's start with Michael in Madison. Hi, Michael.
Hi. First of all, thanks for giving me a minute just to kind of talk.
All right. Go ahead.
First of all, anybody that donates their time to go overseas to help another country has my highest respect and admiration. With Ebola, with everything that's known, that a 21-day is not, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to ask someone to be quarantined. Anytime somebody goes overseas to volunteer time, they go for a specific amount of time, whether it be 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months. Why not make that 21 days part of that spend? So if they're going for a month, they would go for 1 month, 21 days, and include that quarantine. It would make everyone feel safer, feel better. And also, it's not like they're going to be locked in a small room.
Well, she was put in a tent. I guess the question is if it's going to keep people from stopping the spread of this horrendous disease in West Africa. And it would seem to me, Jonathan, that you need to go to people who are scientists, who are doctors, who are working in the field to get the answers to those questions. Should we not trust the medical community rather than the political community with this?
I think there's a mistake in believing that the medical community and the political community are divorced from each other.
Really?
I think the reasoning for not quarantining people that has been given is that it will discourage medical workers from going overseas. That is not an argument that it wouldn't be the airtight way to prevent Ebola from spreading in the United States. I'm not arguing with the scientists about the likelihood of it spreading. It doesn't sound like it's very likely to spread. What I would say is if you want to encourage people to, medical professionals to go overseas, and as the gentleman calling from Dane County, I believe, in Madison, is saying, I think, if you want to incentivize that, there are ways to do that. I think this is somewhat unknown, but when you look at state law and you look at federal law, if you were put under quarantine, your job is required to take you back at the same salary in the same position. So if the question is loss of income, perhaps there could be a program that, because we're talking about a small number of people here, where people either at the state level or the federal level, essentially get their salary restored for those few weeks. There are a lot of different ways to approach this policy-wise. But I think what we're hearing from the American public, from the caller, and also from the polling is nobody wants to take a risk with this. And, I think it is a politically difficult position that the president is in. I think he's getting advice from his administration, from his healthcare professionals that say we really need to be able to get people over there to West Africa. We don't need to have quarantines when people come back unless they're showing symptoms. But at the same time, the federal administration officials do in fact work for the White House and the president, and I don't think you can ever separate what they're saying entirely from politics.
Yeah, I understand that. It's just when you look at this woman who did wonderful work, who's put in a tent for 65 hours, and Christie makes this kind of, you know, disparaging comment, well, she got the best food from Newark, and, you know, it was okay. She had a computer and she had great food. The thing that she said was that she did not have, the temperature was wrong. She did not have a fever. She had no symptoms of Ebola. So doesn't it really spread fear? And she's a healthcare worker. She's been working with Ebola, so she's got some knowledge about all of this. If you have her treated that way, obviously, it seems to me it's going to have an impact on other people who would go to West Africa. It's just not the way you treat somebody.
It's pretty clear that that the way she was treated is poor, and that there was not a good plan in place for how to deal with her in a humane and decent fashion. The conditions obviously were beyond less than ideal. The conditions were bad, and I think that you probably won't see that again. I think that you will see governors ensure that if there are people who are coming back and they are put under quarantine, that they're treated well. I don't know that they'll necessarily be at the Ritz-Carlton, but I doubt that they'll be in tents or have issues with heating or cooling.
Let's move on to the midterms, and let's ask you the question, how big a year do you think, Jonathan, this is going to be for Republicans?
I think it's going to be a good year for Republicans at the polls. As far as how big that is, I think within a fairly small band, but the important part of that is that they seem like they're on the verge of netting at least the 6 seats that they need to take the majority. We obviously won't know until election night because of some runoff laws in Louisiana and Georgia. We may not know until early January. It's my suspicion, though, if we're waiting for those races in Louisiana and Georgia to make the difference, that they will probably end up favoring the Republicans, because those are both pretty red states. And if what is at stake is Senate control, I think that makes a difference. In the House, you're talking about somewhere between half a dozen and a dozen seat pickup for the Republicans on election night. Democrats do not seem to be getting a break right now. It seems like every new news story is bad for them, difficult for them, or neutral. There has not been good news for Democrats in a while. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's Thursday. You never know what happens before Tuesday.
Right.
But it would be shocking if anything other than a handful of seats in both chambers went to Republicans in terms of the net.
And what is the bad news that will make Republicans vote in greater numbers? Is it international news? Is it Ebola? What is it?
Well, I think generally speaking, when you're looking at midterm elections, the Republicans have an advantage for a couple of reasons, one of which is that they're more inclined. There's less of a fall off among Republicans in the midterms than there is among Democrats, and I think that you're in the second midterm election second midterm of Obama's presidency. That sixth year is almost always bad for the incumbent. The last incumbent to pick up seats in that situation was Bill Clinton in 1998, right as the impeachment was going on, and then I think he picked up a seat in the House. So it doesn't happen very often historically. I think people are usually upset with the president, incumbent president, by 6 years in. So this is not particularly surprising. I think, I'm not sure about the House, but the Senate seems like it's likely, if it flips into Senate, into Republican hands, it's likely to flip back into Democratic hands in 2016.
Hmm. And what does it mean for the next 2 years of governing if you do have a Republican Senate and House and a Democratic president? What can we expect?
So I think the big key question here is how well Republicans can work with each other, both within the House and within the Senate, and also between the House and Senate. If they are able to work together and send things to President Obama's desk and set up potential fights on policy and politics, they'll have an opportunity to really shape their message going into the 2016 presidential election. They may be able to get some things done on a policy level, particularly if you're talking about maybe elements of tax reform, if you're talking about budgetary elements, if you're talking about maybe some nip and tuck to the Obamacare law. There are some opportunities for them there. But I think that, you know, assuming for a minute that Republicans take over the Senate, it will be hard to get all the Republican senators and all the Republican House members moving in the same direction. So I think that'll be the interesting thing to watch in terms of how Congress functions. That'll be the first thing. But I expect mostly more gridlock.
Let's go back to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest this hour is Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Willem and Colfax is our next caller. Hi, Willem. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, what concerns me about the Republican Party in general is their sort of, and it kind of ties in with this Ebola thing as well as, is there sort of anti-science or something? Now, you know, the founders of this country were men of the Enlightenment, men of reason and science. And then these people, like Ron Johnson, who I've written many times and has sent me letters that, according to him, climate change is an unproven science and it's an uncertain science and it would be reckless to address it. And yet at the same time, he goes around with all his concern about future generations, and we're willing to make, you know, permanent, irreversible changes to the landscape in western Wisconsin for the oil and gas industry, which is, you know, supports this ideology. And then, like, what kind of future is this country going to have if our leaders are basically, you know, so ignorant or purposefully ignorant? It seems it just makes people cynical. It makes me very cynical about our supposed people who call themselves leaders.
Jonathan.
Well, look, it's interesting. I mean, the beautiful thing about democracy and the ugly thing about democracy is that the members of Congress represent the public who elect them and send them to Washington. So if members of Congress are viewed to be ignorant by their constituents, the constituents will recall them. If they are viewed to represent the views of the constituents, they will get reelected. And so as a result, we get somewhat of a reflection of the country as a whole. Is it a perfect view? No, it's a little bit of a funhouse mirror view of what we all look like, but not so far off.
Do you imagine, as some have suggested, that if you do have a change in the Senate, that you'll see more executive action, particularly on environmental issues, from the president?
Yes, I think you will see that. I actually I interviewed Secretary of Energy Ernie Moniz earlier today at the Washington Ideas Forum, which is put on by The Atlantic Magazine and the Aspen Institute. And I asked him what he thought he could get done with Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who will take over the Energy Committee in the Senate if Republicans win the Senate. And his answer was, there's a lot that the executive branch can do without Congress. So I thought that was a very telling look into what the administration thinks will happen if Republicans take the Senate. Mm-hmm. I think they will spend absolutely no time talking to Congress, or as little time as they possibly can, which is, you know, ironic, because I think, you know, when we think today about the sort of heyday of bipartisan action, it happened in a polarized time during the Clinton administration. But you had Clinton and the Republican Congress come together on a bunch of big deals, mainly because they had mutual interest in getting something done. Sometimes that meant the president vetoed, you know, welfare reform or a budget proposal the first time, but then came back later and cut a deal. We don't see that appetite right now. It doesn't sound like the administration has any interest in trying to follow in those footsteps.
Thanks, Willem, very much for your call. Lines are open at 800-486-8655. We're doing essentially an All Things Political Thursday edition today, with the midterms coming up next Tuesday. Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, Jonathan Allen, is with us this hour. When it comes to next Tuesday, are there certain states that you're going to be looking at very carefully, Jonathan, that will determine whether it will be a good evening for Republicans, or a spectacular evening, or a good evening for Democrats?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I really want to watch the New Hampshire Senate race early on. She gets fairly early reporting out of New Hampshire. It's a pretty small state. We should know pretty early how that's going. And I think that if you see Scott Brown beat Jeanne Shaheen, the sitting senator there, it's going to be a very good night for Republicans. And I say that because Number one, I think, you know, Shaheen has served in that state for a long time, is fairly well known and fairly well liked. I mean, especially for an incumbent senator, because most places in this country, if you tell people you're from the Senate, they tell you to leave. So she's pretty popular there, and yet Brown, who moved from Massachusetts, where he had been a senator, to run for Senate in New Hampshire, is really neck and neck with her in the polls right now. And to me, that's one where I look at it and I say, boy, Scott Brown wins that race. It is a good night for Republicans. I think conversely, you know, if you're looking for a good night for Democrats, if they are to win in Iowa, where Bruce Braley is the Democratic congressman who's running for Senate, and Joni Ernst, a veteran, is the Republican candidate. I think if Braley pulls that out, he's had some big mistakes over the course of the campaign, but the polls have been fairly even over the course of the campaign. He pulls that out, I think that's a pretty good indication that the Democrats have a shot at keeping the Senate. And, of course, the even bigger one is Colorado, where Democrat Mark Udall, senator, has slipped behind Cory Gardner, the Republican congressman there running for the Senate seat. If Udall were to pull out Colorado, I think, you know, the rest of the election night will have looked very good for Democrats, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid will keep his job.
Mm-hmm. And what in the world is going on in Kansas?
I thought you were going to ask what's the matter with Kansas. It's a very close race between Senator Pat Roberts and Greg Orman, who is running as an independent but essentially has gotten the backing of Democrats and Republicans who want to get rid of Pat Roberts, whatever their stripes are. You know, there's sort of an odd situation there with the Democrat dropping out, and so Orman has basically taken all of that Democratic steam. He's somebody that Democratic leaders in Washington obviously hope wins, but he has said he's going to wait to see who's running things in Washington before he chooses who to caucus with if he wins. That's going to be a close race. It would be interesting, certainly, if the Senate seemed to hinge on it, but we'll see. I have a tendency to think that in a pretty Republican state in Kansas, that most of the Republican voters will come home on Election Day, those who are undecided, but I've been wrong before.
So if a gentleman is running and you're not sure as you're casting your vote who this person is going to caucus with, then why would you vote for that person?
Well, you know, you might not be tied to the idea that a partisan representative is your best bet for the Senate. I think, you know, most Americans know whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and they may get angry at their party from time to time, but they typically show up and vote for the members of their party unless there's a particular, you know, candidate in a particular race of the other party they like. And, you know, but right now incumbents are so unpopular and parties are so unpopular that I think, you know, an independent running as a challenger has the ability to attract people who are just frustrated with the system.
More phone calls in a moment. Here's how you reach our conversation with Jonathan Allen, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, worked at Politico earlier. And we're looking at just a variety of issues. Obviously, the midterms, which he believes will be a pretty good night for the Republicans, and told us to tune into the New Hampshire results early on, the Brown-Shaheen race. If Brown pulls that off, it should be a good night for Republicans. And he mentioned some other races that we've been paying special attention to. We can also talk about the Wisconsin race for governor, if you would like. We haven't asked him much about that, other than is it a good thing for Governor Chris Christie to come to the state to campaign with Governor Scott Walker. Jeb Bush, another national story. Maybe it's too early for you to think about this, but it's not in our political world in this country. It would appear that he's going to run for president and is a favorite of many establishment Republicans. Is that the way for Republicans to go? I mean, he's got support among Latinos, or is it better for the Republicans to be grooming some people who are younger, who are new in politics, as Missouri Senator Roy Blunt suggested? Why not start grooming people like Rand Paul or Marco Rubio? And we have to talk about gas prices. There hasn't been a lot of talk about this, but they're really low right now. And as I filled up, I got so much more gas than I did just a couple weeks ago. What's going on with oil prices? And usually those figure into an election in some way. Will they for these midterms or not? And what it is that maybe everybody will be off, but most political analysts say it will be a pretty good night for the Republicans. Why would voters be more inclined to vote Republican than Democratic this go around? What do you think? Lines are open to you, getting close to the election, and we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655. Jonathan Allen is our guest this hour, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News, and we're talking about a variety of political topics. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
I'd like to talk about all three subjects, the Ebola, the voting, and then the final little thing I'd like to touch on is gas prices. But Ebola, both sides are correct, and why Mr. Obama cannot see this, I don't understand. Of course, we need nurses and doctors to go over there. But now the arrogance of this nurse who has now just decided on her own that she is not at this present time infectious. Science tells you the virus is mutating. It's gone through 1,300 people in Africa. So apparently it's a little easier to catch than the president has said. And if we wait for people to become infectious here, what happened in Dallas? Other people become infected. So both sides are correct, and these doctors and nurses should just voluntarily say, I will stay in my home for 3 weeks, just on a 1% chance that maybe I'm fine today, but tomorrow I might have the fever. I mean, I don't understand it. Voting. I received in the mail this last week a postcard from I do not know who that said, we know, Ray, you voted three of the last four elections, which is average for your neighborhood. That in and of itself had my blood boiling so much. I'm left of left, and I probably would have done a write-in. I really hate Scott Walker, but I also hate the Democratic machine. They're two sides of the same coin. Gas prices. Can I speak about gas prices?
Yeah, go ahead.
Kathleen, it's obvious that you believe in global warming, but you just stated instead of buying less gas, you actually purchased more gas.
Yeah, I drive a car, Ray. A lot of us do. I'm sorry for it, but a lot of us do. Let's talk about gas prices, though, Jonathan. Why have they gone down, and is this an election issue?
There are a lot of reasons for them going down, and it's not always necessarily as, you know, it's not as related necessarily to crude oil supply, things like that, that I think we try to equate. I think there's a lot that goes into it. I don't think it's an election issue. I think it's an election issue when gas prices go up to some extent. Not that the politicians have anything to do with the price of gas. I mean, unless they are using the government to manipulate it, which they generally aren't doing. I think what was interesting about what the last caller said, one of the things that was interesting about what the last caller said is he identified himself as left of left.
Right.
And also said that these Ebola medical professionals ought to be volunteering to quarantine themselves for 21 days. And I think those two pieces of information together explain the polling that you're seeing where 80% of people want a quarantine on folks.
Interesting.
Regardless of this is something that really crosses party lines. This is look. There's no evidence of anybody suspected of having Ebola in Wisconsin, so far as I can tell. We've had New York now, Dallas, this is something that sort of bugs people and it worries them in a sort of visceral way. So I think that's important in politics.
Well, I think one of the other things he said maybe. We got to be a little careful of when he said it appears that it's easier to get than we've been led to believe. I've never heard anybody say that, have you?
Well, I haven't heard any of the medical professionals say that. I think the point that he's trying to make is that it's not contained to one or two people in Liberia and Sierra Leone, other parts of West Africa. So the idea that it's like impossible to get once somebody has it, that it's impossible to communicate or difficult to give to somebody else is obviously by the evidence in West Africa not exactly right. But I think the ways in which, look, I trust the medical professional community. When the CDC says it's hard to get this, I believe it's hard to get it. If they say it's communicable only through certain bodily fluids, or certain touch or whatever, like, I believe that. But at the same time, obviously it's not impossible to get.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that really, we have become so isolated in some ways. We've done shows on Ebola, months ago, in which people who were forecasting what would happen with this disease were spot on with their predictions, and they were from top-notch universities. They knew what they were doing. The fact that everybody doesn't get into an uproar about this until it reaches the United States, when it has to be taken care of in Africa, in West Africa, or of course it's going to spread all over the world. That makes sense to me, because it's not, people get on airplanes. People travel all over the world these days. You simply have to take care of it there. You think?
I think that's the idea, is to take care of it there before it comes here. Or before it comes here in any sort of widespread way, or before it spreads to the rest of the world. And I think it's a legitimate question as to whether you're discouraging healthcare workers from going over there. I don't know that there's any evidence of that. We talk about science. I don't know that there's any sort of broad evidence that healthcare workers don't, who would otherwise go to West Africa to try to save people or to try to study what's going on over there, have been dissuaded from doing that by the prospect of a 21-day quarantine. I think what we have is one nurse who was treated poorly in New Jersey, who, who's been very upset by it, and is now back in Maine. And I think, we should all just breathe for a minute.
Okay. Thanks, Ray, for the call. A listener from Chippewa Falls asked this question. You're probably aware, Jonathan, that President Obama was in Milwaukee a couple days ago to campaign for Democrat Mary Burke, who's running for governor. And the caller asked, was it a good idea to invite the president to stump on her behalf, given his low approval ratings?
Yeah, I think it's a very good idea for her to ask the president to stump on her behalf, despite his low approval ratings, for a couple of reasons. I think, number one, Governor Walker's not been particularly popular. I think there are a lot of Democrats in Wisconsin who wanted to see President Obama come in for Mary Burke. I think he's somebody who will energize the base there. I think it's less of a risk in Wisconsin than it is in some of the states where his approval ratings in the 30s. It is a state that voted for President Obama. I think there are any number of reasons for her to want him in the state. And I think, look, he came to Wisconsin for a Labor Day rally on Labor Day, with union workers. I actually took that trip with him, and I thought to myself at the time,
I did.
It was fun being there. I was only briefly there. He touched down in Air Force One, go to the event, come back, get on the plane and go. But I thought at the time, the White House must know that they're still polling pretty well here. They obviously sense a chance to knock out Scott Walker. So I think there's some personal interest in doing that from the president's part. I think, he is somebody who wanted to be supportive of workers in Wisconsin. And I also think that, the possibility of knocking out somebody who could be a Republican presidential candidate in 2016, all of those are reasons for the president to want to be there. I can only imagine that if they thought it was bad to bring him in, Mary Burke wouldn't be bringing him in.
Mm-hmm. Aaron in Madison. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
Thanks for having me here. I think that if Republicans succeed, it's going to be in part because a lot of Americans are hurting right now and feel disappointed with Democratic leadership. But I think placing blame on the Democrats is misguided, since the Republicans have been so unwilling to cooperate, work across the aisle in Washington.
Jonathan.
Yeah, I think the caller is right that there's disappointment with Democratic leadership. Look, the biggest issue by far, I think, that underlies all of this right now is stagnant wages. I think if the economy, to a large degree, has recovered, is poised to be more robust going forward, In terms of a lot of the metrics that you would look at for that. You know, corporate debt ratios are down. We're seeing, you know, growth, you know, successive quarters of growth this week, or this month, or this quarter was a little bit less at I think 3.5% today than it was last quarter. But you're starting to see signs of economic recovery. And at the same time, the worker has less ability to buy things than he or she did pre-recession. So I think that's a problem, and I think that that's hurting the Democrats more than anything else right now. As far as partisanship in Washington goes, it takes two to be, takes two to fight, and I don't think that there's been any great desire on the part of the president or the Republicans in Congress to actually work together.
Thanks, Aaron. Frank in Onalaska. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Frank, I guess, if you follow the cost of a gallon of gas per barrel, about 30 to 40 cents per gallon is due to Wall Street speculation. Rising supplies and falling demand, Wall Street's pulling money out of that speculation, hence the drop in price. As for all these folks that think that medical volunteers should volunteer their time on their own dime, these folks who believe in this mandatory quarantine when there's no medical evidence showing that they're a health hazard should put their money where their mouth is and make a contribution to Doctors Without Borders or the Red Cross, because, you know, it's easy for them to say they should sit there and be idle for 3 weeks after spending volunteer time in Africa. Let these folks who think that, you know, make a donation then, because they're not making any offerings to help this problem.
Thanks very much for your call, Frank. Jonathan, want to respond?
Yeah, I think that's what I was getting at earlier when I said that the state or federal governments could probably, we're not talking about a whole lot of people here, state and federal governments could probably come up with the money to hold these folks harmless in terms of making sure that they're not missing out on salaries or wages for a three-week period if they're in quarantine. Most of the laws that I've seen dealing with quarantine at the state and federal law level actually require employers to take back people who have been quarantined for medical reasons by the state, to take them back at the same salary and position when they left as when they left. So really, there's just that missing 3 weeks of pay, and of course the loss of freedom to be anywhere other than your home or wherever it is you're confined to in quarantine. Trying to find a way to hold those folks harmless would seem to solve everybody's problem.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's talk about the horse race just for a moment because we are getting so close. Do you see any signs as you look at day-to-day polls, and I'm sure you probably do that, do you see any kind of Republican surge in any of the important states here, or do you still see that there's a slight advantage, but it could be different on Election Day? What are you seeing?
I think most of these races have stayed fairly consistent in the last few weeks. What you see is small movements, often within the margin of error. Certainly, races tend to tighten a little bit right at the end. In North Carolina, I think Senator Hagan there had an advantage for quite some time over her opponent, the State House Speaker Tom Tillis. Tillis seems to have edged up just a little bit there. I think that's one of those states where you'd look at and say, if the Democrats lose North Carolina on election night, it is a bad night for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Jonathan, ever so much for being with us. I'm sure it's going to be, not that it isn't always, but a really busy few days for you.
It certainly will, and it's my pleasure to be on with you, and I hope to make it back out to Wisconsin soon.
Great. Please come and visit us. We'll have you as a guest in the studio. That would be dandy. Jonathan Allen, our guest this hour, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. He worked at Politico earlier. He's the author of HRC, which is a look at Hillary Clinton's time at the State Department. He said during this hour that it seems pretty obvious that she's going to be running for president in 2016. He's past winner of the Everett McKinley Dirksen and Sandy Hume Awards for reporting. And he's been in Milwaukee on Labor Day. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production. Our next political conversations will be taking place on Monday. Julian Zelizer, who's a fine political analyst, will be joining us for a good portion of Monday's show, and he'll be looking at the national picture on the day before midterms. And then the second half hour, we'll be speaking with people from the state of Wisconsin and looking at the important races in Wisconsin. So That's our next show, All Things Political, that will come up the day before the midterms. No political talk on the day of election. And then we'll talk about the results the day after the election, of course. News from NPR is coming up in just a moment. Stay with us for the next hour. This woman is just so interesting, Kimberly Motley. She is from Milwaukee, and she is the only foreign litigator in Afghanistan. She's done extraordinary work.